A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to episode 118. That was a good start, wasn't it? He paused immediately. Welcome to the show, and of course, just as I finally ditched the old lockdown theme tune, finally got it together, worked with my brilliant music guy, Subdiffuse, aka Steve Shanyasky. By the way, if you want anything done, give us a shout. I'll put you in touch. But we got that sorted, and then suddenly we got the Omicron, aren't you? The Omicron. And then, you know, can we save Christmas? Is Christmas in jeopardy? I mean, seriously, man, could journalists in this country just get beyond the habit of thinking that good journalism is asking the most fucking depressing question? Do you know what I mean? Like, you get the impression that with journalists, if someone said, I found a lump on my tit, that they would go, are you going to die? Are you going to die? Could please answer the question. We don't know anything about this fucking variant, do we, really? It might be a bit more transmissible. Some people in South Africa are saying that it's less virulent, you know, or it's less, I don't know the word, less bad. but here we are. Of course, they've taken the step of reintroducing face masks from Tuesday in England. And of course, up in Scotland, we've always been wearing them. Good for Scotland, okay? We had a period whereby we didn't for a while, and it was nice. Do you know what I mean? I'm glad that we had it. And I got into, not a spat, but an interesting thing. I was drunk on Saturday night. And of course, I took Boris's speech when he said, he did his press conference on 5 p.m. I immediately thought, so what you're saying is, Boris, I should go out tonight and get right on it because things might go tits up. That was just my interpretation. And I was drunk on the way back, and I saw that Andy Burnham, who I am a fan of, I like him, you know, I think he's the kind of guy that probably Labour need to be looking towards. And he'd said that, this is why I said that masks should never have been removed, you know, from mandated use. And I just got the up and I said, Andy, mate, I like you, Andy, because I'd had a beer then. I thought we was mates. I said, but if you can't like drop restrictions at a time when vaccine immunity is high, natural immunity is high, and we didn't have any new variants, then when can you, right? Because, all right, there's a new variant. A lot of people will probably think we should bring back the mask. I don't know, man. I'm not so sure myself. But what I will say is that I think if you're saying that we can't drop restrictions during the good bits, then I'm out. Do you know what I mean? Then I'm going on a march with Piers Corbyn. I don't know if you saw the video this week. Him and some of his mates did a thing on the tube. Some things you can kind of give a summary of. It's so fucking weird. I'll put it this way. Do you remember those EU hymns? Remember when they were going for their revoke marches a couple of years ago and there was people coming in on coaches from fucking St. Ives or something? And they were singing these weird hymns like, you know, the EU is a force for good, so we should not leave it. I thought, I don't think that'll ever be topped for a wanky fucking song. I just that's a word. And I think these guys, if they haven't topped it, they've run it close. Basically, the principle of their little song is you can't contain a fart with trousers. You've just got to watch it. It is really weird. Welcome to what most people think. The show that is willing to admit the restrictions are annoying. Okay? I do find it odd in comedy. The comedy industry does seem to be just a tad out of step with, oh, is it? I don't know, maybe it's not. But you do feel like a lot of comics, you know, just like all the, you know, love the NHS, they sort of want to fall behind. Wear the fucking mask, guys. I'm like, I'm not sure that's the way to win people over. But anyway, we've got another comic who's perhaps coming at things from a different angle, is making his debut this week. Is the brilliant Nick Dixon. A lot of you will be aware of him for his stints on GB News. But what, you know, what I speak to him about that, but what I principally wanted to talk to him about, which is a story that he's told before, but something happened earlier this year where he tweeted something and found himself very much on the hard shoulder of comedy, waiting for a recovery vehicle. And it was brutal, man. And I should do what they do in media now. Just do a tease and Nick will pick up the story later. But we also get to hear some of his views on gender, some of his more traditional views, and indeed COVID. So this show, as you, is uniquely funded. You won't hear any adverts in this show. You know, not knocking people to have the adverts. I just always like to do things slightly differently. What's that? I know people think, what's that, Jeff? No one asking to advertise. Yeah, they are. They do. Spotify are in touch a couple of times recently. But I have patrons who fund it, and it means that I don't have to suddenly recommend some fucking juicer that I've never used. You know? I just go, hey, ding dong. Hi, I'm Jeff Norcott, and I hope you're enjoying what most people think. Well, what about what most people juice? I just don't want to be in a position of saying that. So we do shout out to every new patron here, and we've got a VIP this week. VIPs get shouted out at the top of the toe. Top of the toe? That sounds like an arts thing. Top of the toe to the hockey is... Okay, so maybe we'll give this guy a darts nickname. So his name is Dominic Lowe. Dominic! What would it be? Dominic the Crossbow Low. It would be one of those really clunky as fuck ones that doesn't fully scan. I love the darts. I'm going back. We're going back on 5th of January. They've finally taken the BDO back to the lakeside. So we're going to have the old chicken in a basket. It's great. It's the best form of darts. I know that everyone likes the Ali Pally one, which is a bit more rock and roll. But this one, you get to watch darts and you'll have a picture of like Freddie Starr. Nick, a signed photo of Freddie Starr next to where he's sitting. It's brilliant. The cuss count for last week, so it was a solo episode. The episode with Rachel Paris. Oh, by the way, Rachel Paris, I'm still getting stick that I was cozying up to Rachel, and sometimes intimations are far worse. I'm a married man, good friends with Rachel and her husband. That is absolutely not the case. But, you know, I don't see... If someone says something that I politically disagree with, you know, one thing I think on the left often happens is people just call you out and tell you off. I'm not... If I disagree, I go, okay, you know, she sees that differently to me. So it wasn't a case of that. But obviously, I've still been getting stick for putting on Mieres and Graces, for having a lady on the show. Well, we were back to full working order last week on the solo show, which definitely everybody listened to. 0.95 a minute. But I enjoyed that show because I think it's fair to say that I was getting a bit tame for a couple of episodes on the bounce, and there was just so much bollocks. So if you haven't listened to episode 117, do go back and listen to it. 0.95 swears a minute, and we had one exotic swear, which was motherfucker. Motherfucker. It's hard to say that as an English person, isn't it? Like when American people say it, they go, motherfucker. So we do have a guest show this week, but there's a bit of news that I wanted to just cover because I'd hate to let this go begging. Is Starmer, Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer, he had a reshuffle the other day. He pissed off Angelina Rayner. Yeah, it's the second time that he's blindsided Angelina Rayner. Angelina, am I just giving away how attractive I find her? Because she had this big speech on Tory sleaze, right? She was building up to it, big swing for the fence, and then Keir's only gone and done a reshuffle at that time. Now, you have to admit, even if you're a fan of Keir, we always say about Keir Starmer, he's a decent man. He wants power. How do we know that he wants power? Well, he's the leader of a political party and he's trying to be prime minister. So, in one way, he is just like the rest of them, okay? I know that the Stormtroopers or the Starmerites or the Starmer Chameleons, you know, he is not some sort of saint. He wants to run things. Is that cultural appropriation? Do I get to say that? But he wants power. And what he's done is that's a piece of manoeuvring there. Manoeuvring par excellence. Maybe he's just finally learned how to play the game. And it does seem that Angelina... Why do I keep saying Angelina Rayner? Let's just call her Angelina Rayner from now on. So he's brought back in Yvette Cooper. One benefit of having Yvette Cooper back in is people know who the fuck she is. You know, that's not been true of a lot of the Labour front bench. I still can't remember who's the last Shadow Chancellor. Do you remember that quiet Scottish lady that just came and went and made no impact? So Yvette Cooper, people know who she is. I think she's Shadow Home Secretary. And the move seems to have upset everybody at Navarra Media, so that probably means that it was a good move. And the centrist dads are delighted, aren't they? There's a certain kind of middle-aged, centre-left bloke. They just think if Yvette Cooper comes back, everything will be okay. That same Yvette Cooper that was actually around during the Miliband years and doesn't have a massive track record of success, but just get Yvette back. We got David Lammy back. Was he ever in the show? I think he was. I mean, if he can just leave behind his clickbaity tweets, you know, he once said that the ERG, the European Research Group in the Tories, were worse than the Nazis. Can we just say, I mean, we mentioned anti-Semitism last week. You know that form of racism that is not considered fully racist for reasons I'll never understand. But can we just stop equivocating things with the Holocaust or Nazis? All right? You know what was as bad as the Nazis and the Holocaust? The Nazis and the Holocaust. Nothing else. Nothing else has been as bad. It stops there. Stop trying to do analogies. You wouldn't do it about other... I mean, can you imagine these people, like, talking about aspects of slavery and drawing analogies about... So they just wouldn't do it. So don't do it with the Holocaust. But anyway, with Starmer, bit by bit, he's edging out the hard left, which is fine, but people want their politics represented precisely. And there are a lot of activists, members, Corbynistas in the Labour Party that will feel bit by bit that they are not present, you know, within the upper echelons of the Labour Party. And I think, you know, I still think that this massive Labour Party car park family fighting of fucking Weatherspoons has to happen. I don't see how they can avoid this. They're just sidestepping it. They're a family just trying to grin and bear it, just staying together for the kids. And it doesn't get spoken about enough, I think, which is the existential threat of the Labour Party actually splitting. Because how the hell do you reconcile? The Tories, as we said, they'll get together for power. They love a bit of power. It's like Mama will come out and say, if you lots don't stop arguing, nobody will have any power. And they go, sorry, Mama, sorry, sorry. Whereas the Labour Party are just like they're having, you know, they're sitting at a brewer's fair, just all eyeing each other, and they're just staring. And just all it needs is for one of the more gobby women in the group to neck a white wine quicker than she should have and go, you fucking slag, you've always hated me. Wine glass gets lobbed, suddenly people are pulling each other's hair, mushing each other's faces down in the bread sauce. It's all kicking off. Okay, so before we start the chat with Nick, just a couple of quick thank you and a fuck you. Thank you to the fireworks around my way. We have a Christmas fair opening type turn on the lights thing. And I would say that they definitely had a rollover from the budget from when they didn't do it last year, because that thing went on so long. I think some of the older people probably were getting out the old blackout curtains. It just got to a point where it felt like it had finished and then people went to applaud. And then suddenly they took it up a notch and I thought, this is now like kind of Winter Wonderland in Hyde Park level fireworks. But I enjoyed that. And just a fuck you to the people. So we've got masks coming back in, right? And, you know, we try and accommodate all points of view on this podcast. Well, mostly mine, let's be honest. But to the people who exclude economic harm as a form of harm, all right? So when they talk about masks, they just like, look, it's just a simple thing that you can do. When there is research that suggests that it does affect people's propensity and willingness to do things, to go to hospitality, maybe that's the point. But you often get the same people that argued against leaving the EU purely on the basis of the harm that it would do to GDP. Well, you know, they don't seem to apply any of that. You know, so, well, you know, if GDP goes down, we have less money for doctors, nurses, you know, we have less money for our art centres. And they go, well, yeah, all of this is true of COVID. So I just think that, all right, be one of, you know, be in support of masks, but just don't be flippant about it. Just wear the fucking mask, Jeff, okay? Just wear the mask. I don't know. Maybe there's something about it. Every time there's one of these mandatory things, I feel like somehow in my adult age, I've got back to a point where I have to answer a prefix. What most people think. So that's done with that. Let's get into a chat with the brilliant Nick Dixon. So making his first appearance on What Most People Think is Nick Dixon.
Hey, am I going to talk then?
Yeah, well, yeah, I should have said hello, Nick, or some sort of indicator. I thought you'd be all au fait with this now, being the media whore that you are on GB News.
How dare you? What a word. What a word to use.
Well, no, I mean, I see you're appearing on lots of shows, and then the other night you actually had to step in and deputise for, who is it, Mark Dolan? Or
Mark Dolan, yeah. Somehow Mark got a super cold. Don't know how it happened. People are saying maybe I gave him it. But anyway, yeah, I did the second half of the show for Mark Dolan. I've done four appearances in the last week. So you're right, I'm all over it.
Yeah, no,
going
it's
hard
good,
on
man.
GB News. Some people won't do it. I'm just like, cool, I'll just do all the spots.
It's, I mean, there's this new show with Simon Evans, Headliners, who's got some great people. I think fans of this show will enjoy it. It's got people like yourself, Dominic Frisby, Leo Kirst.
I came up with the name as well, as I like telling people all the time and they get really annoyed. But I came up with the name Headliners. It's quite a good name, isn't it?
It's a very good name for a topical news show which has some comics who would frequently headline clubs.
Exactly. You've got it. You've got the concept. It's a new show. We're still working out some of the you know, kinks or whatever, but people like it. Yeah, it seems to be doing pretty well.
Well, look, I mean, so what you do is you kind of get the headlines and you guys go with... So, well, I suppose it's kind of like topical comedy, but from a different political view than what you would get normally, you know, on television or radio or pretty much fucking anywhere. But let me put Don the hat now of the kind of lefty type person and throw some cliche questions at you about GB News. So do you have to, like, say the word woke like a certain amount of times contractually?
We actually do. It's 15 per show. Yeah, yeah. And we have a meeting after if we don't hit those numbers. Yeah, we do say woke quite a lot. I try and sort of be a bit ironic about it. Someone said the other day on Mark's show, actually, they said, oh, I'm sick of all this woke stuff. And I said, you're on the right channel. And I thought, and then I had to say, we're impartial, just to say we're not really just that. Because it is an impartial channel. We are regulated by Ofcom. I say we, as if I've sort of lived
there
now.
No, mate, this is the thing. You're a company man. It's great to see.
They are regulated by Ofcom. I had to do Ofcom training, which is a sort of emphasis on not swearing and not slandering, were two of the main ones. I'm the only, like, Jeff, this is amazing. You'll appreciate this. I'm the only comedian that's managed to not swear or slander or say that Santa doesn't exist or one of these things that you're not allowed to say. And for some reason, every show I do, the other comedian within minutes will swear. And I'll be like, why is it so hard to just not swear, guys? And I'm like, and then I suddenly realize I'm ultra professional. I'm like, right, in a business where I'm the most professional, we're in a lot of trouble.
That I would agree. I would absolutely concur with that. I mean, did you used to do teaching or anything? Sometimes that can help you develop.
No, I'm just like, okay, I won't swear. I was like, why is that so hard? And I realized comedians are just, they're just sort of renegade people, aren't they? They're completely crazy. And I'm amongst comedians relatively normal, is what I'm starting to realize.
You do seem like the kind of comic that you suddenly find out has gone to church every Sunday for the last 6 years.
Yeah, I don't really go to church as much as I should because of the whole masks thing, but I do believe in God and Jesus, so you're pretty much right.
Yeah, I mean, I go to church sometimes. I do wonder when I go whether I'm just doing it as another thing to annoy most comedians. I don't know if you were gigging. I'm sure you certainly were. Do you remember?
You're just there in the church. They'll hate this.
Yeah, basically,
just singing the hymns, going, if they could see me now.
They,
that's the most ridiculous reason.
Yeah, no, that would be like, in terms of how God would view me, I think that would be the worst thing to do, would just to cause conflict. But no, I mean, I certainly have like a boring sort of agnostic type faith, and I sort of think, well, I live in Britain, is the easiest thing to do is to be an Anglican, you know, and I'm absolutely certain if I lived in Tehran, I'd be a Muslim. You know, it's just like, I have a faith, I'll attach it to the most kind of like socially sort of convenient way. But, you know, I don't know if you remember during the late noughties and stuff, because Labour were in power, stand-ups wanted to punch up. They always want to punch up, right? But it wasn't as obvious what to do it with, you know, because Labour were in power, so they didn't really want to criticise them. So there was a lot of anti-Christian humour around.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I mean, I even remember Jim Jefferies doing a whole show where he's, like, doing all this edgy stuff, which was sort of mainly like anti-women and stuff. But then he did a bit that was like anti-Christian. Everyone's like, woo. And you're just thinking, I felt at the time, this is insane punching down, but he thinks it's punching up. And they're all like whooping themselves up, like, aren't we edgy? And I'm thinking, not really. That's incredibly easy to do.
Well, I think that what they did, comics at that time, they would often, because there was the Westboro Baptist Church in the States, and, you know, these, and Christianity in the States and here is completely different things. But for the sake of feeling edgy, a lot of people equivocated them. So they tried to make out like there was an extreme Christian right in this country. And I was at that time, I was going to church more regularly. And it was quite funny to hear comedians talking about the firebrand Christian right. And there'd be me on a Sunday morning with a lot of people that just wanted to have a biscuit.
Exactly. Funny, I was going to say, what are they rebelling against? The biscuits. I was actually going to go with biscuits. And you got there first. I was like, we both have the same idea of the Church of England. Once a year at Christmas, you get the little orange with like sultanas stuck in the side with toothpicks at my church. I'm like,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
cool.
No, we get that as too. Yeah,
I'm always like, you know, who am I to question the ways of the Lord? But like, yeah, exactly. It's not exactly edgy, is it? And now, of course, the Church of England is very woke. Just to get in my woke quota already, it's gone woke, hasn't it? But Yeah,
Are you on a commission? Every time you say trans activist, do you get a sort of commission?
I tend to say TERF a lot. I just throw that around on Andrew Dawes' show. Yes. I see what you're doing, Jeff. You're painting GB News into a corner. I notice you're
I'm promoting it. I'm taking the piss about the cliched views that people have. Because I think that's something that people often forget is that it is regulated by Ofcom. There are certain things you literally can't say. And then they'll take as gospel certain media outlets that are very successful on Twitter that have no fucking regulation whatsoever.
Right. And I've done it again. They are trying to be very impartial. And sometimes if I feel the other view isn't being represented, I'll just deliberately represent it. And they're always trying to get people on. And Andrew Dore recently was getting attacked very unfairly on Twitter about a debate he had where he didn't have a woman on it. And he's like, you know how hard it is to get women? I've had this many women already. I've tried to get them. No one was available. And he's having these like booking nightmares. And people are just sat at home going, oh, no women. And he's just like racking his brains trying to get people on. Because a lot of people that won't do it, who knows why. And then they've got to be available. They've got to be the right type of... They've got to know the issues. There's a whole Venn diagram of GB News. And it's quite small sometimes to actually get people on it.
There's definitely... I mean, I speak to Andrew a lot and there's definitely an appetite to get balanced. When you said Andrew Doyle being unfairly attacked on Twitter, I think that's sort of like...
That's his thing.
Every day. I mean, like his programme, like Free Speech Nation, it just... These monologues that he's doing are so great. And I think that... You know, absolutely nailing the subject. And it's so funny because, like, he's been doing it long enough now that he makes his argument so reasonably. Like, he covers all the angles. And then people just sort of, like, they need a bogeyman, the left, don't they? More than the right. They sort of need someone like, right, who's the baddie this week?
I always think it's hilarious. Why is that? They've picked Andrew, like, the nicest guy. You know what I mean? Just this nice guy. It reads a lot complicated books. You know, just a super nice guy. Left, liberal... gay person, you know, and he's the enemy. I always find that hilarious.
No, he's not left liberal gay. He's right wing and pretending to be gay. Let me just correct you then, Nick.
Oh, sorry. I know that's the one.
To represent the Twitter view.
He gets called a typical straight white public school right wing male. I'm thinking, yeah, he's literally none of those.
Yeah, but he's pretending. That's the if they run to the end of that train line, they'll go, oh, they're pretending.
To be fair, I did call him homophobic on his show yesterday, so I did go there.
Well, the truth is, actually, I've known quite a few gay people that kind of don't like gay people. I think that is possible, right?
It's the last person you'd expect, isn't it? A gay person to be homophobic. It's a great trick.
Well, yeah, I suppose, you know, what you get is, I've known a few blokes that just have said to me, Jeff, I'm a homosexual, I'm not gay. And I don't think that gets discussed a lot. They're so manly, right?
Right.
That
they don't even look gay or anything.
Yeah, no, no,
they're technically homosexual.
Yeah, no, no, there were. I don't hear it so much now, but I remember there was a few of my pals that sort of made that distinction with me because they were so fucking like macho that even being associated with that word. So I don't know where they fit into the acronym. I don't know if there's a specific word.
Yeah, well, maybe the new thing might be to say I'm gay, but I don't really go for the LGBTQ+ stuff. That's the sort of new way of saying that, maybe.
Yeah, or maybe like the B in LGBT is for bear.
Yeah,
like, people always think that it's bisexual. Maybe it's for the bear community. And if you don't know, I'm very gay savvy. I've been on the scene many years. It's kind of like big set guys with beards and stuff like that. And they're the kind of guys that I always think that if I was going to give it a go, I'd want to just know what it was like to feel safe in a man's arms. But anyway, look. Okay, so a lot of people will know you, Nick. I'm sorry for making you tell a story that you've had to tell many times, but I do think it's important that we recount the... So when was it you sent this tweet? So you sent a tweet that essentially where a lot of the comedy industry rounded on you. When was that? Was that still this year?
Yeah, I think it was back in May. I mean, yeah, it was a while ago now. I mean, you could have got the exclusive, Jeff, if you wanted, but I did go on Trigonometry and talk about it. But yeah, I think it was a while ago now. So
did I just get a little bitch slap there for not coming in earlier? I talk to you about your current GB. This is just a casual little bit of the show, you know, and then you go hyping the excellent Trigonometry, who they actually discuss. I'm basically discussing topical issues, trying to get to a knob gag, but...
Right. Well, I did talk about it on there, and I talked about it on talk radio at the time, but actually, you defended me on TV, though, which I do want to thank you for. That was very cool. My mum said, Jeff Norcott's defending you on TV. I was like, oh, that's very nice. I'm not going to watch, because I'll go insane if I watch all this stuff about myself.
Yeah,
but it's nice that you did that.
Jeremy Vine show. But just in case people don't know, if you could just quickly tell us the story of what you said in the tweet and the reaction to it.
Okay, I'll try and recount. So basically, okay, so someone who liked my comedy tried to get me a gig without my input, just a nice act. I didn't particularly have any interest in doing the gig because I tried to not leave London these days. But he sent me this message. Hey, I tried to get you this gig. This is what the guy said. And I thought the message was so bizarre that I just thought, oh, this will be funny to share. So he basically said, I'm aware of Nick, didn't necessarily say he likes me, but I'm aware of him. But what I'm trying to do is get less straight white men. He said, I'm trying to get the opposite. When I say opposite, I don't mean a gay disabled woman in a wheelchair, something like that, black gay disabled woman. I'm paraphrasing. But he goes, you know, but you know the kind of thing I mean. I'm trying to get blah, 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 diversity. So those were the promoter's words, not mine. So I thought, that's a funny message. So what I did, I decided for some reason to tweet it. But I took out all the sensitive information, even anything that could even trace it back to the club. Even the club that he said, oh, I've seen Nick, I know he plays. Even the club he said I play, I'll even take that out, so they're not involved. So I took out all reference to the club, all reference to the guy, blacked all that out, and just posted the tweet. And just said something funny. I just said, mildly amusing, I said, I look forward to a day when I can be judged on the content of my character, or at least the content of my content. It was like a stupid reference to Martin Luther King saying, me not getting a comedy gig is much like the civil rights struggle, was the obvious, which is obviously ridiculous.
It's an obvious piece of hyperbole. Right?
Yes, exactly, Jeff. So it's not a laugh out loud, but it's like a ride to it. It's like, oh, this is mildly amusing. Thought it would get like 38 likes, which it did. But the problem was then the Daily Express picked it up. And they're like, can we cover this tweet? It's like, I'm like, all right, I mean, yeah, I mean, and normally, 9 times out of 10, I just say, they say, do you want to talk about this? And normally I'd say no. Every other time I'd say no. For some reason, I was like, yeah, all right, I'll say something. Let's see what happens. Which is, I got the answer to that anyway. So I just said, yeah, I'll say a couple of things. Then, of course, it comes out all tabloidy, and you're like, well, I mean, that's lacking.
What kind of things did you say, and how did they represent it?
Well, I don't know. I just sort of made my arguments. But the thing is, when you see them in print, just sort of no nuance, you know, it didn't have the requisite levels of self-awareness and irony that I try and build in. So I would always say things like, look, I know no one really cares about the plight of the straight white male comic. You know, it's not the genocide
in
Rwanda.
Yeah, yeah.
I would put little things in, like, so you can see that I don't think this is so important. But the way they framed it, and then with the headline, a straight white man complains about straight white gig, the, you know, all this kind of just the way they frame it is so... It always makes you look a bit ridiculous. So not necessarily their fault, probably my fault. But that was actually fine. Everyone ignored that piece. No one cared. But then it was shared by Chortle, who sort of took it and gave it as sort of red meat for the comedy world. You know what I mean? Like, look at this idiot saying a thing. We can attack him now. You know, a cynic would say that's what Chortle were doing. A less cynical person would say, oh, they're just merely covering the story, doing their job. So whichever you want. So Chortle's a... I'm sure your listeners know it's a comedy website. So they covered it, and that's when all the comedy world...
And also, it should be said that, you know, and I think Steve would say this himself, Steve Bennett, who runs the site, you would certainly... It's clear in his reviews that he's leans leftward, right?
Yes.
He's explicit about that himself. It doesn't, you know, he gives coverage to people like myself and stuff like that, but certainly people would know that his politics would be towards the sort of left, culturally left end of the spectrum.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say they're above... having a little dig. I mean, they did. I saw them review a show once, and it's and this is a little comedy insider thing. Shows at Edinburgh Festival had to be 50 minutes or more to qualify for the award. Did you know that? I think that was the rule.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, you know that, obviously. But in this review, it said, yeah, and there aren't quite enough, there's not quite enough structure or something like that, blah, blah, in this 45-minute show. Like, he mentioned the minute length of the show to disqualify the person from the awards. So this is the kind of thing we're talking about. So that does go on. So it's not impossible.
Well, I had a review in 2018 where the reviewer mentioned something that one of my punters said in the queue. Going in, that one of the punters had used the word coloured, not like in an actively racist way, but they just described a black person. As we know, that's not a good word to use in 2021. But here's the point, I didn't fucking use it.
Right, exactly.
You know, so the idea, and I just thought, I have never ever read a review where someone has mentioned what the punters were discussing. You know, so I guess what we're getting at here is that sometimes we do feel like, you know, not saying that they are... sort of objective in their view of us, but like if we step slightly out of line, the fucking heavens might open.
Yeah, and you could argue, actually, all he did was cover the story. I don't know, because I didn't read the piece. I don't think I've ever read it. But I think people might have been saying he just pretty much covered it. But I suppose maybe I'm at fault, because if in just covering the story I look stupid, maybe it's actually me that's at fault. But what I'm saying anyway is that when it was in the Express, no one cared. But when it's in Chortle, obviously it opens it to the comedy world. So I guess I'm just saying, pity they covered it. I mean, people were messaging me saying, are you okay? And one of them said, oh, it's just because I've seen the Chortle piece. I was like, the what? Sorry? So I hadn't seen it. I don't read it.
That horrible feeling.
Yeah, that horrible feeling. I've just seen the Chortle. So then it got out of control. And then the Telegraph picked it up. And I'm going, oh, God. Because now it's just escalated. I don't know if you've ever been in one of these. Oh, you've been in them. But they just escalate. And you're like, what's happening now?
It's people are just messaging.
You feel physically sick. You're like, yeah, it's in the Telegraph. Then someone messaged me, you're on the Jeremy Vide show. I'm like, oh, my God. And people might think, oh, comedians love attention. Hard to believe. I actually don't like attention. I don't particularly want people talking about me or even looking at me. Like when I'm on stage sometimes, I think, why are they all looking at me? I don't actually want... I just happen to be okay at talking and telling jokes and stuff. That's my sort of skill set.
And also, it should be said, you're an excellent comic, right? But at this point, you know, you've done the bits at telly. I think you did, like, Paramount at the Comedy Central, at the Comedy Store and stuff like that. But you're not someone that is versed and ready for how to deal with this shitstorm. Like, it is... It's come in out of pretty much nowhere, and then it becomes like a national leading story, right? So that must have been massively unsettling.
Yeah, well, I would argue no one is equipped to deal with it. I mean, it just escalates. It gets more and more out of control. People are messaging you, are you okay? And you suddenly realise it's in the Express, it's in the Telegraph, it's on the Jeremy Vine show. Mm. It's just this little tweet I put, you know, I had no idea it was going to get out of hand. And there's no way to cope with that, really. I don't think there's any way a human can cope with it, because what you have there is the mob, so-called, piling on you. I mean, what would be the precedent for that? Like, the entire tribe, like, running after you down a hill. Do you know what I mean? We're not built to be rejected by the tribe.
No.
And we're not built as an individual to have thousands of people attacking us. So there is no way for a human to cope with that that I've heard of. And anyone I've spoken to who's been through much worse ones than me has just says it's absolutely horrific and they've had to have therapy and...
So we should clarify, when you say the tribe, so this is quite a lot of people in comedy now that picked up on the story and were using it to sort of demonstrate a point of view, like, huh, you know, look at this white guy moaning, oh, you know, and then it was a variety of views, wasn't there, you know, or maybe you're not just, you're not funny enough, mate, or maybe you're not. And in fairness, a lot of people were quick to acknowledge that you're a very good comic, like, I think that is beyond doubt. But then you get this kind of second wave of arseholes who are reading those accounts that know nothing about your comedy. And it's just kind of a jumping off point for them to say that thing that they pretty much always say, right? Like, white guys moan, etc., you know.
Yeah, so a couple of things there is, like, when I say tribe, that was really just a metaphor. I don't necessarily think of comedy as my tribe. It maybe is even worse, though, because it's comedians who are meant to be your colleagues. So that is, yeah, probably is a touch worse. And the other thing is, yeah, people just come in, oh, he's just shit, or he just can't get gigs. That one was hilarious because I left one of the best live agents in comedy deliberately to do less gigs because I was so burnt out traveling around the circuit and doing gigs in Leeds and getting a 5-hour night coach getting in at 5 a.m. I just couldn't do that stuff anymore. I travel a lot less now because it just didn't temperamentally suit me. But so it's just quite funny to me that I was always trying to get out of gigs. Oh, you just can't get gigs. Like, no, I can get gigs, thanks. But, you know, he's just shit. But I always thought that was irrelevant. I was like, it's really, even if you hate my comedy, that's irrelevant. Like, I'm indifferent to it a lot of the time. But, you know, I always thought that was not a strong argument to attack me. It's like, is what I'm saying true or not? That's the point. And you're just attacking me is an obvious ad hominem, isn't it? So, yeah, a lot of people just came in. And like you said, but other people defended me. And that was a great thing. Loads of people defended me. Big comics attacked me. I probably haven't told the story properly in sequence, but some big comics attacked me, threw me under the bus. People I've been nice to my whole life. People I thought I'd got on with. And that was quite upsetting. And then, but since then, loads of people have defended me. And actually, even bigger comics, more famous than the ones that attacked me, have actually messaged me to defend me and say, you're a great comic and keep going, which is really nice. Because I think some of these big comics and other people thought, oh, we'll just attack Nick. And actually, quite a lot of people seem like me in comedy. So that's what they didn't bank on, because I'm actually not this horrible person.
What most people think.
Again, you do sort of think with these big name comics that we're talking about here, great that they DM you. You think it'd be nice if you said it in public as well. I've had moments like that myself where you think, well, what's the problem with saying this in the public domain. You know, I mean, the only experience I've had that was, I mean, I've had a few comics come at me online, you know, colleagues on Facebook as well, which weirdly is more personal because of your family and friends generally all see. I'm not saying in any way that what you experienced was definitely more of a violent thing, but I found that very difficult. It used to make me feel sick for days on end. And then when I was on the BBC diversity and inclusion panel, so which I completely misread and honestly just thought it was a one day thing, I'd go along, say a 10 minute bit, and then I had no idea. So the BBC did a press release the previous night before the first day that we met, and by 6 a.m. the following morning I was out walking the dog, and you know, you just pull out Twitter, have a look what people talk about today, and my name was trending already, and I had fucking no idea why that would be. And then The Guardian and a couple of left-wing publications have basically said BBC employed Tory comic on diversity panel, which is absolutely not why I was there. It was to do with class, right? It was to represent working class stuff. Even though the BBC had said that in the press release, right, they fucking said it, The Guardian decided to pretend that that wasn't the case. And then, but it wasn't just the fact The Guardian, all these papers covered it. You know, The Telegraph kind of looked at it their way. The Mail, hilariously, clearly went through my Instagram and tried to find what was the most white bloke photo they could find of me. They didn't want a professional one. And honestly, they picked one where I looked like a fucking ticket tout. I'm standing on a train station thing with this kind of wanky, like this sort of fighty look on my face, and wearing like this duffel coat thing. And yeah, just screwing out of the camera. Yeah, yeah, it's double England polo face shirt. Paint. England face paint, jumping over a ticket barrier at the same time. And
reading
yeah,
the Daily Mail.
And then there was one newspaper that found my address within 6 hours, and my wife had a knock at the door. God. Yeah, and that really freaked her out. And I had to ring this guy, and it was so hard not to threaten him, right. You know, because I had to speak in this coded way. I was trying to put the shitters up him a little bit, but sort of
right
because the thing with the press.
Have you met my friends? I know people.
We
can meet somewhere if you want. You know, a car park. Like, yeah, how did you put it?
I just said, is mate. I guess if there's one thing in life that you don't want, it's your wife to feel threatened, and when that happens,
yeah, you'll do anything.
It was basically that. I said that would produce a specific reaction in you as a man. Do you know what I mean, mate? And I was just kept having this discussion with him.
Accidents happen all the time.
Yeah. Hey, what can I say? The guy, he walked off the end of a cliff. Last we saw of him. Yeah, it'd be a shame if something happened. Good journalist. Had a couple of nice stories there. I don't know why I'm speaking like Bill Burr. So when you say that I defended you, I was on Jeremy Vine, and, you know, I think as usual, if I was on, that means that the other person was quite left-wing, and they were sort of, again, I think using it as a stepping stone to make arguments about white entitlement that they wanted to make. And I just said, look, Nick is a very good comic, you know what I mean? Like, it's so easy for, you know, I did say that I wouldn't, knowing how Twitter is, I probably wouldn't have tweeted it in the first place, but the reaction from the comedy industry, from certain people that would probably say that they were advocates of mental health, that were just for the sake of likes and approval engaged in this fucking pylon, mate. I thought it was really bad, I have to say.
Especially one person who, yeah, talks about mental health awareness, himself admitted being suicidal when he got cancelled from a big job, and he admitted that on a live podcast where I was there and chatted to him afterwards. And it's like, right, so you've been suicidal, you've had mental health problems, you've been cancelled, you've been piled on, so, and now you're doing it to me. So, I mean, how can someone do that? I mean, it really goes against the golden rule, doesn't it, as laid out by Jesus. I mean, it's do unto others. I just find that so shocking. I mean, you expect lots of idiots to troll you, but when it comes from people like that, I'm just like, mate, you just throw me under the bus to hundreds of thousands of people. How do you think that's going to affect my mental health? Thousands of people liking your tweet, and then they're all piling on me. What do you think that's going to do to me? And it does. You don't want to sound, don't want to sound too woke here, Jeff, but it does really affect your mental health. There's no real way of coping with it. I mean, I couldn't sleep for 3 days. I couldn't eat. And I wasn't even looking at it.
By the way, I don't think mental health is a woke thing. I think we're allowed to, we all can reclaim.
Right. Tyson Fury talks about it, so we can.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's almost a very manly mindset. Is like mental health is woke. You know,
well, I've got a podcast where you just said your gay mates can't even admit they're gay. So I'm like, what is the manliness?
Yeah. If this guy's gay mates are sort of anti-gay, what is the I think you're right. I think that there's two ways of talking about mental health, right? One is a constructive, real way of talking about it, and one is just literally saying hashtag mental health because you know it seems like a nice thing to have said. I've had this thought for a while. I think that the people that claim to be mental health advocates never actually talk about mental health specifically. They talk about talking about it, and that's not the same, is it?
Right, that's interesting. Yeah, they
well, do you know what I mean? They say, well, it's very taboo, and you go, is it? I don't see any pushback on talking about it. Just go ahead, fucking talk about it. But they never do.
Right, that's interesting. The one I've noticed is they attack men all year round, and there's one day a year where they say, we need to think about mental health awareness, suicide awareness. It's like, you've just been attacking men the rest of the time. That's like, oh, male suicide. It's like, you didn't care about it 364 days of the year. You know what I mean? Those kind of people. So there's a lot of hypocrisy around it. Yeah.
Did you see the Tory MPs? I was just trying to sort of make this vaguely topical, but there's a Tory MP that said, made a weird connection between Doctor Who being female and sort of male crime and violent crime going up. See this guy?
I missed that.
It was pretty stupid what he said. Like, he didn't, either he is a bit daft, but, or he just didn't make his point very clearly. But again, people dunked on him. And this was during a talk that he had on International Men's Day. And I thought, fair enough, he said something stupid. That's the gig, right, in politics, is that, you know, that is what happens. But I thought, it's a real fucking shame that the only thing that I heard about International Men's Day was that a Tory MP said something stupid. It got fucking no coverage other than that.
Right, right. And there's lots of people using it to attack men and say why, what's wrong with men and what we can do on International Men's Day. Like, can we have one day where we're not attacked? How about that? International Men's Day, the one day we're not attacked. So I was hitting back against all that. I did a bit on Headliners the other day attacking Benedict Cumberbatch. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Yeah, I feel bad having a go at anyone. But he just said this thing about, yeah, men need to shut up and listen and we need to fix men. I'm like, can we stop with all the shut up and listen and fix men? Men are all right. Men should embrace masculinity. Masculinity is not bad. What's bad is thwarted masculinity, which can't find an outlet. Therefore, you end up with incels shooting people or you end up with some of these people are going to terrorism, whatever it is. But that's the problem, is when you can't be men, when there's no outlet for men, there's no respect for what men's role is. The problem is not, so I completely disagree, the problem is masculinity. The problem is thwarted masculinity, that, you know, that's
But you see how, so if, you know, if we were on Jeremy Vine and I was the lefty, the way they would spin this is they would say, so thwarted, you're saying, you're blaming, that's what they would say. You're saying other people are doing stuff. This is how the tabloids would run it. Mm-hmm. Other people are doing stuff, which means that it's fine for incels to just shoot people. Is that what you're saying, Nick?
No, that's of course they would say that. And I would say, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying young men need support and guidance. And the way to do it is not demonize men across the whole media. Look at the massive rise of Jordan Peterson. What was this guy doing? Some people say, well, he's just uttering trite homilies. It's like, yeah, and he's absolutely massive because of it. So he's obviously tapped into something. So he's tapped into the fact that men completely lack guidance and have, you know, don't know what to do. They lack father figures. The world hates them. The media hates them. But they're told masculinity is evil. So one guy comes along and says, hey, maybe it's okay to be a young man. Maybe it's tough. Here's some things you could do. Sit up straight. And they go, thank you. You know what I mean? How desperate.
Yeah, make your own bed. Yeah, I mean, that's quite feminist, isn't it? Make your own bed. Yeah. Come on.
Put the toilet seat down. Yeah.
Guy, he's fucking woke. He's Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, it's not really going to work, is it, attacking half the planet? We've got to work together. And when there was that horrible Sarah Everard thing, there was a suggestion that there should be a curfew on men. That when that woman in the House of Lords said maybe there should be a curfew on men, they should go home before 6 p.m. And this actually made it to the House of Lords. So the insanity of that.
Just a slight correction, 10 p.m. Come on, mate. She's not an idiot. I mean, it's quite reasonable, Nick. 10 p.m.
Oh, 10.
I mean,
well, that's fine then, yeah. Yeah, we should.
I mean,
she should.
That's late enough for the football to finish. I mean, she's actually being quite considerate. Okay, just a quick hype this week, but not before we've welcomed the remaining new Patreons. We've got Simon Edgington. Simon Edgington. No offense, Simon Edgington, but you do sound like a Lib Dem spokesman. We now speak to the Lib Dem spokesman, Simon Edgington, for Business and Affairs. And just when the Lib Dem goes, sorry, Simon, somebody important has come in the room. We got James Keane. Keno, is James coming? Oh my God. Do you remember Keno on that last stag do? Oh my God, mate. I thought he was going to get arrested. And we got James Claro. James Claro? Isn't Claro like a Spanish word for something? I'm just Googling here. What does Claro mean in Spanish? Claro. It means sure. James Shaw. Hey, No, I don't know what accent I was about to do. An Italian accent there. There you go. I'm satisfying the stereotypes of the Brexiteer here. Graham Wilkes, you just sound like, I don't know, were you one of the Goonies? That's one bit of comedy from that era that I've never... Like, your old man used to swear by the Goonies. Oh, my God. They would crack me up, the Goonies. Yeah, Graham Wilkes was like the fourth member. Do you know what I mean? The one that always had to play the part of the woman. And then we've got King Jason, who I'd imagine is Jason King, or he's just very confident, very confident. Maybe he dominates in the showers. Do you know what I mean? But welcome to all those people, and thank you for helping to fund the podcast. Obviously, I'm going to keep plugging the tour. Back on tour February 2022. Look, one way or another, everything's going to be all right, isn't it? Then they'll have bought out the version 2.0 of all the vaccines, or everyone will have got fucking fed up with it. So book those tickets, particularly if you're going to Margate, Aylesbury, Norwich. They're all booking very quickly. A little heads up, I might not be able to announce this yet, but I'm hoping they're going to have new dates in Glasgow and Oxford and a couple of others for May. And just a reminder, if you have read the book, anywhere that you can leave reviews, whether that be Amazon, Goodreads, it does help. It really does help. And same for the podcast. And I've also got a YouTube channel. And if you just think, what does Jeff's dog look like? Well, get yourself over to Instagram, because that's the only thing that I've thought is worth putting there. Anyway, let's get back to the chat with Nick Dixon. I think we're picking it up from the point of talking about an interesting complaint that the excellent Leo Kearse, friend to this parish, recently of this... Anyway, we're talking about a complaint that Leo had about his comedy. I'm just thinking about Leo Kearse's tweet. So Leo Kearse, friend of the show, who is gone, he's put this thread into the public domain, which is that he did a set at a club, and someone who was there tried to get him cancelled from that club. So I'm just going to read the transcript, and it might take a little while, but just to get people on side with the story. So this was a complaint that was made to a club, which Leo's redacted, so I won't mention the club. But I'll read it. Should I read it in a really patronising, sort of whiny fucking voice?
We were
at the 6 p.m. show, seeing the Leo show. This is the second time I've seen Leo live, and we found him absolutely horrific. He kept making jokes that were transphobic, homophobic, and incredibly misogynistic and other phobic words. I've thrown that bit in. He was making jokes about the Me Too movement, essentially saying that women deserve to be raped. I will bet you any money before we even go on. I am going to guess that he wasn't fucking saying that. But let's keep an open mind. I am a lover of something that's been redacted, and have been many times. However, I found Leo's content incredibly appropriate and, in short, not funny. I'm a lover of comedy, also comedy that's on the edge. Now, first we've got a breakout here. I've noticed a trope in kind of snowflake-type people that when they complain about comedy, they now do this thing where they actually have to claim that they're... I actually love edgy comedy. It just, this wasn't, okay?
Right.
I've had this in reviews and stuff with me. Like, hey, look, I love radical, out there comedy. And it reminds me of in the 90s, you used to get these old type conservatives going, look, I like a good laugh as much as the next man. And then they would go on to demonstrate that that wasn't fucking true at all. So this goes on. It's saying his first set in July made me incredibly uncomfortable. So she's gone back to see him again, which is hilarious. But this one was entirely unacceptable. Okay, she's the arbiter of what is acceptable, evidently. At this point, the group of us are debating about whether or not we come back to this comedy club, which is the implication of group action, right? You're going to lose money. This is how these people operate. But because of this man's horrific inverted commas comedy... because, of course, you've got to put the inverted commas there. I would be very disappointed if I see him play again. Anyway, I'll cut that short. I think you get the general gist of it. So, luckily, this club video every set. And it was proved that he didn't say those things. Like, I think several of the subjects he didn't even cover. And surprise, surprise, he didn't advocate women being raped. Now, we talk a lot, Nick, about cancel culture. And one of the reasons people claim that it doesn't exist is because people like... Louis C.K. can come back, Dave Chappelle can say what he wants. And basically, they quote men with global fan bases and 40 million quid in the bank. But this is an example of how it works at ground level, right? Are you seeing more of this sort of thing?
Yeah, well, there's so much to go into that. I mean, you mentioned Louis C.K. I just saw some tweets about Dave Chappelle was nominated for a Grammy. So, like, see, he's not cancelled. And they said Louis C.K. is nominated for a Grammy. See, he's not cancelled. I'm thinking, he did lose millions of dollars and get publicly shamed in front of the entire world, but he was kind of cancelled. But fair enough, he got the Grammy nomination.
I know, we're talking about like the absolute apex comics in the world here. So I'm not sure they're the litmus test by which we can judge comedy.
Right, I know, this is weird, claim cancel culture doesn't exist. Obviously it does. Yeah, I thought that Leo thing was so funny. The unacceptable was my favourite part. I just wrote to him, unacceptable, mate. I just think the idea that this comedy's unacceptable. I'm like, the most arrogant, ridiculously unacceptable. Who decides that? You, some idiot. But the great thing is, I know that club well, and the owner would have just said, yeah, you're wrong. But yeah, they'll check the video.
But isn't this the worrying thing, though, that owner is the exception that proves the rule? A lot of comedy clubs, and like a lot of corporations, anything even starts to look mildly threatening on Twitter, they cut off the limb, right? Whether or not it hurts the body.
Well, this is it. I mean, they did that to Andrew Lawrence, didn't they? His agent dropped him. All live venues dropped him. I only played this is why I do Comedy Unleashed and a few other good clubs. I just do the clubs that are cool. If clubs are not going to support comedians, don't bother with them. But yeah, and also that thing you said about, I am pro-edgy comedy. The other one is, I'm pro-free speech, but that's the other big one. Yeah. The trans person that wanted to cancel Dave Chappelle at Netflix, they were like, no, I'm totally pro-free speech. Just think maybe there should be like a panel that gets to look at Dave Chappelle's thing and decide whether it should go out. And maybe some bits of it should be changed or not put out. Maybe it shouldn't come out. I'm like, that's not pro-free speech. That's a censorship panel that you run.
It's the worst. It's worse than just saying, actually, I think that's more sinister than just saying, because I don't like it, it shouldn't happen. The idea of erecting some sort of panel, that seems to me to be more sinister because they've actually put thought into it.
Who
picks the panel?
Maybe me. I mean, maybe it could be. You
know? Maybe me and my friends on my WhatsApp group.
Maybe we sort of dictate how the world works. I don't know, just throwing around ideas. I know. The other one is that comedy in inverted commas. They think that's the great insult. So-called comedian. It's like, well, I am a professional comedian, so that doesn't really mean anything what you're saying. And it's just funny that, Leo got that. I get hate emails. So to answer your question directly, I've heard more and more people having these problems in clubs. Nico, our friend Nico Yearwood, was saying he had four of these incidents in like a couple of weeks or something. So more and more people are complaining to clubs. They're going along, they're shouting out their stupid thing, thinking that it's important. There is more of that. I mean, I'm not doing as many gigs lately. I get hate emails for going on GB News instead. I'll get sort of, you know, you're like Lawrence Fox and Darren, what's that lad? Darren Grimes. They'll say you're like them. I always think that's a funny insult because it's like, you know, I'm actually not like them really, which is why it's an insult. Because if I was like them, I go, oh, cheers, mate. Brilliant. So it's not an insult. But if I'm not like them, then it's an insult to say I am. So it kind of undermines their premise.
See, it just shows that you're a more modern, contemporary figure to me, whereas me, they say you're like Jim Davidson and Bernard Manning, because they know. But what they're trying to do is, what can we associate you with that will be damaging to you? The other thing they do, you know, with the inverted commas comedian, is a lot of them make the mistake of putting it in speech marks, and you go, well, the first one at least implies that I'm not a comedian. The second one implies that you're quoting somebody else having called me a comedian, which actually fucking corroborates the idea that I'm a comedian, you absolute cunt.
That's funny. Yeah, they always think that's so stinging that. It's like, well, look, mate, I've done thousands of gigs. I've been paid for them. I've been on TV doing comedy. This is not the great diss you think it is. It's just not.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm at customs in America and say, what do you do? Sadly, I'd love to say I'm not a comedian, but I am a comedian. You cannot lie at American customs. Right. They know. Have you ever, my God, it's the most terrifying experience in the world, isn't it? Like, you think, when I'm standing there, American customs and immigration, I don't just think, like, I think, am I like an international drug trafficker and I've just forgotten and they're going to work it out?
And what are you doing in our country? Yeah, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Why are you here?
Yeah. Is it because, like, we secretly all do think it's the best country in the world. So there's a psychological level of tension that they're trained to know that we feel, right? Like, you know, I like to live in America. We've got that shit playing in our head.
Right. Yeah, you come to England, it's like, oh, thanks for coming. We're like, oh, amazed you want to come here when it's raining. But then it's like, why do you want to come in the United States? Yeah, because they know that everyone's trying to get in.
They just stare into your soul. And then they go, like, and then you start thinking, like, I'm about to admit a weird dream that I had last night. Mm-hmm. If this goes on much longer, you know, just blurt it all out. I shouldn't be having dreams. We're related, you know. Sorry, please still let me in your country.
I know. I haven't been for ages anywhere. I mean, I'm probably never going to travel again. But that's a whole other topic. We don't want to get into that because then we'll get into vaccine passports and stuff.
Well, briefly, I did want to get into it a little bit with the Rona. Is that we've got the Conservative government. They brought back in, you know, in the face of the Omicron variant, which doesn't seem like we know a massive amount about. We think it might be more transmissible. We don't know if it's a worse illness. But the government, who, remember the government who said that the roadmap was irreversible. So it turns back, we're going back to face masks from Tuesday, which whether or not you think it's a good idea, it is fundamentally, they said it was irreversible. So they're reversing it. So there's that. And from Tuesday, it's going to be in shops and on public transport. And it brings out this thing that I've never understood, Nick, throughout all this, is I get people who think that masks help. What I don't get is people that are just simply pro-mask as a rule. They just like masks. Yeah. Where does that come from in someone's personality?
Well, firstly, to address Omicron, I said Omicron sounds like the name of a transformer who can instantly transform into a police state, which I thought was like a reasonable joke.
That's good. Well, a lot of, you know, so people were trying to, what does it sound like? But you've added a second layer to the joke there,
yes,
which I like.
Thank you, Jeff. I do try, so-called comedian.
Omicron, I also think it sounds like if there was a James Cameron film, it's like the lazy name for the evil corporation.
Omicron. Yeah. Well, the other question about masks, well, I've been very outspoken on masks and I've lost friends over masks. So, yeah, I'm very anti-mask. I can't help it, really. But I'm just very anti-mask. And do you know what? You can't help what things perforate your conscience. And for some reason, masks are one for me that I'll sort of, I'm prepared to like go to prison over for some reason. Yeah. I don't know why, but that's the nature of conscience. You're like, this is so important. People are like, why is this so important to you? Don't know. Just is. It's a really big one for me. So I'm very anti-mask. And I've had massive arguments. People have said you don't care about other people. One ex-friend said you deserve months of suffering, which I thought was interesting.
Months?
Yeah,
well, at least
months.
It wasn't years. I mean,
that's nice, isn't it? Yeah.
That could be as little as five.
They meant that I deserved to get COVID, is what it was. So the mask slips, I mean, since we're talking about masks, the mask slips very quickly of... We care about other people, so everyone should wear a mask because we care about people. Oh, well, I don't really think we should wear them. Die. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, where did the caring about people go? That was quick.
No, it's good that we're back to, if you don't do this, you want people to die. I'd like it because we had a don't kill grandma thing. It'd be nice if granddad got a little go this time around. Don't kill granddad.
Exactly. What about men, guys?
But then again, they probably do want to kill granddad because statistically, granddad is an old, straight white guy.
Patriarchy.
So, yeah. They probably think that COVID is like this sort of like woke influenza that's come around to cleanse us of gammon. There's one thing I want to circle back to because I think it's a very interesting thing that you've said there. And just before we go, is about like, you know that your passion about masks is faintly absurd. Like not totally, but like you can't defend it. Because I was thinking this the other day, I was thinking if they brought in like vaccine passports for jobs, I'd march, right? I've marched for anything ever, and I'll march. Right. And then I sort of thought, yeah, and I felt really passionate about it, and I will do that. But also I thought, well, some people might legitimately say, there's loads of stuff you could have marched for, Jeff. Mm. Like why this? And I think that is a fascinating thing about politics to me, and I think it's a very intelligent thing, is for you to know, you clearly know that it's just a hunch, it's something deeper within you, that you don't understand why you're this passionate, but the fact is you are. And it's what we're all doing. We're all getting behind our hunches.
Well, I think it's an incredibly serious thing to just say, hey, you're all going to cover your face now. You know the bits you breathe from. One, we don't know the medical implications of that. We don't know the implications for children and childhood development. We don't know what it does to society to say, I can't see you smile anymore or see your expression. There's a whole and they don't work. There's a whole host of it. Then people say they work a bit. I'm skeptical. But, you know, someone said to me, I said, what about the human smile? Is that banned now? And then you go, well, we'll just put our thumbs up instead. It's like, oh, really? You've ended smiling. That's gone, is it?
That's definitely as good.
So it's back to this thing of thinking we can just radically change nature. There's a reason we don't wear masks. It's obviously, there's the environmental damage. There's loads of reasons you can cite. But yeah, ultimately for me, yeah, why you get more passionate about some issues does seem to be a gut thing. That does seem to be the nature of conscience. And God in his infinite wisdom seems to have made it so that some people are equally passionate about wearing masks. So for some reason, that's how it is. There always has to be a few of us who are outliers. I think the outliers fulfill a role in society, but we're obviously hated because that's the nature of being an outlier, right? There's always a few people, it's usually me and Peter Hitchens, who have a different view on any topic and are hated, but we need those people in certain circumstances because they might be right.
Yeah. I think I would fucking hate, you know, like in the same way that when Freedom Day happened, it was debated. That's what's supposed to happen. But because sadly with COVID, one side is more, just the same with all the left-right divides, one
side is more inextricably associated, or certainly they do, with virtue. So you're not always having a debate, you're sort of having a pissing contest as to who's the best human.
Yeah, and the problem I always have with that is once you have the correct opinion, inverted commas, you can basically behave any way you like, which goes back to the mental health stuff. It's like, I'm the good person, therefore I can do any number of bad actions in service of my good beliefs. You know, I've had people attack me. I had someone like take an old photo of me off my private Facebook. It wasn't a bad photo, just like to use against me on Twitter because I was like looking skinny in the photos. It's like saying I was weak. In the context, it made sense. But it's like, so you went to my private Facebook to put a photo to try and humiliate me on Twitter. And we were arguing about, it was about vaccines or masks or something. Because you were a good person, you did that. So it's like, I'm supposed to believe you're a good person just because of your views, despite all your actual actions.
Your actions, yeah.
That's the big thing I have a huge problem with. I don't believe in this means to an end thing. I believe like, no, demonstrate with your actions you're a good person. Then it doesn't really matter what you say.
Well, Nick, I think, mate, it's clear that you are... I mean, doing all this media work, mate, you're good, man. You're good.
Well...
It's really...
Thank you. GB has been a lifeline to me. You know, they've been nice to me. Andrew's been great. I've got this headliner show. I was on it 4 times last week. So the great thing is, because it's new and lots of people don't want to do it, I'm like, cool, I'll do all the spots then. So it's just a glitch in the matrix that I end up presenting. I mean, especially even hosting Mark's show. It's the first time I've hosted... never used an auto cue before or an earpiece. I'm like, yeah, can you host a national TV show? That's a glitch in the matrix that I get to do that. So I'm just appreciating it.
And, you know, all these people that climbed in on you, you know, at that time, what they've done is they fucking radicalised you, mate, haven't they? It's their fault. You would never have done GB News otherwise. You've drilled down into this and you've found your natural home among us arseholes. Listen, Nick, thank you so much for coming on What Most People Think. What should we direct people towards? Obviously, there's all your social media stuff that people should get and find you and gigs and stuff like that. You're on GB News. Anything else?
Yeah, the best thing is probably at Nick Dixon Comic, Nick Dixon Comic on Twitter if you want to hear all my mask-related views, or you can go on my Instagram if you just want to see my gym photos. But Nick Dixon Comic, and we're doing headliners every Monday to Thursday, 11 p.m. on GB News, and I'm on it once or twice a week. You don't quite know when I'm going to be on because it's a rotating panel.
Yeah,
and I do Andrew Doyle's show, Free Speech Nation. But those are probably the main things. And I write some spiked articles if you're into that.
You know, I've seen a few bits of headliners and it looks excellent and it's getting better all the time. So people do check that out. And Nick Dixon, thank you very much for coming on What Most People Think.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, so that was the brilliant Nick Dixon. So do keep an eye out. Well, go follow him on all his social media stuff and do keep an eye out for him on GB News and in particular on Headliners, which is hosted by another friend of the show, Simon Evans. I just got one letter for this week. It's one of those dilemma ones, which I always think, these guys that think of these are sort of weird, twisted geniuses. Okay. By the way, if you have a letter or anything you want to pick up in this show, email whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. Letters, I mean, they can be political, but I quite like fun stuff like this. Dear Jeff, let's not piss about. We need to get straight to this one. Would you rather, this is from Paul in York, would you rather shit yourself every month in public or every day in private? Merry Christmas. It's a good dilemma, that, isn't it? Shit yourself every month in public or every day in private. So the easy one would be to go every day in private. But how private? I mean, if you're in your house, family members are going to know. My son's at a delicate age. You know, my son's at a delicate age. He just smells that smell again. And just like, you know, he sees the old man just running downstairs. Suddenly the washing machine's on again, you know. And the wife's not happy. Yeah, I mean, that is what's more stressful. I mean, what is it with these people that come up with these dilemmas? Would you rather shit yourself every month in public? I mean, would you know when it was going to happen, which day at least? At least it would be a bit like waiting for a delivery guy. You know, you might shit yourself between the hours of 7 and 11 a.m. or every day in private. I mean, I'm going to take private as being on my own. But then how would I know when... I mean, this is just disgusting. Paul, I'll tell you what, Paul. You're a sick man. You're a sick man. But if... Oh, my God. There's no good answer to this. I suppose I'd have to go for... In public, because then I would have at least... an average of 28 to 29 days where I wasn't shitting myself. Every day in private, I think that that would grind you down. So, yeah, I'm going to shit myself in public once every day. And let's hope people are there with their mobile phones to film it. Okay, so just one new review on the iTunes, on the old iTunes. And it says, the person is claiming to be Jamaican and is daring me to do the accent. Well, do you think I'm going to get cancelled on my own podcast? He says, here is a well-deserved five-star... No, I'm not doing it. For being the voice of reason online amidst a concert of virtue signalling. Keep it up, blood clot. I mean, if you are... I do not believe that. I think you're a mischief maker, is what you are, all right? And you're trying to get me in trouble, but I'm not taking the bait. Listen, thank you very much for listening to What Most People Think. We'll be back next week with either another brilliant guest or me wanging on. But thank you for all the support that you give. If there's somebody that you know that might like it, fucking tell them about it. Have a good week. Bye.